to the Creative Pen Podcasts. I'm Joanna Penn, bringing you interviews, inspiration and information on writing, publishing options, internet sales and promotion for your book. The companion website is www.thecreativepen.com, and that's pen with a double N. And here's the show. Hi everyone, this is Joanna Penn for the Creative Pen Podcast, and today I'm interviewing Karen Schmidt. Karen is an award-winning speaker, workshop leader and author living in Brisbane, Australia. Karen has been recognised as a certified speaking professional and also as the winner of the National Speakers Association of Australia, Queensland 2006 Speaker of the Year Award. You can find Karen at www.letsgrow.com.au. Welcome, Karen.
Thanks, Joanna.
Great to have you here today. So can you tell us a bit about yourself and your books and your company?
Well, my business, Let's Grow, has been going for about 11 years now, starting out running workshops for organisations and nowadays also on the conference speaking circuit. And I generally speak about employee engagement. So how do we engage people of different generations, how managers can get the most out of their staff, and also personal engagement. How can people stay on top of their game at work? At the moment, I've got one book on the market, which is called How to Feel Fresh at Work Every Day, and I'm actually just working on the final chapter of my latest book, which is called Keep 'Em Keen, A Guide for Managers on Engaging People of All Ages and Career Stages.
Wow, that's great. So let's talk about that How to Feel Fresh at Work. How did you come up with that idea? Is that based on your own expertise?
It certainly is. You know, I've been working a number of years when I came up with the FRESH concept. So FRESH is an acronym that I use, and it stands for forward thinking, resilient, enthusiastic, stretching and holistic. And when I sat down to look at, well, what are the things that I think have created the energy and enthusiasm that I have for work and have gotten me to where I am, doing some research on that, I then thought, okay, what's the way to present this that's going to be memorable? And that's where the FRESH acronym came up. I mean, lots of people use acronyms, and you know, it certainly helps us to remember their message. So it really started from there, you know, having all these random thoughts and thinking, you know, this is all the stuff that I know works. How can I put it in a format that other people are going to remember it? And of course, with FRESH and my business being called Let's Grow, it lends itself to a, you know, a really good flower logo that I use and all sorts of things that can branch off that.
Mm. So how long did it take you to write that book? Is it something you always wanted to do?
It's interesting. I had, up to that point, enjoyed writing a lot of articles, mm-hmm. Both for my own website and newsletter, but also was starting to get approached by different publications. Firstly, when I was speaking at events, an organisation would have, a professional association would have a big conference coming up. To market it, they would say, hey, you're one of the speakers, Karen. Do you think you could write an article for our newsletter? Mm-hmm. So I had, you know, started doing that. And then the idea of, probably through National Speakers Association, that it's good as a speaker to have a product of some sort, got me on the idea of the book. It's interesting as to how long it took. I really wrote the book in a couple of stages. I had the concept. I had the outline. I'd probably written two-thirds of it. But then my business got busy in other areas and writing the book became a lower priority. So I put it on the shelf for probably 6 or 9 months. Circumstances changed. I picked it up again and then, you know, finished it off in a fairly short period of time after that, probably a few months. So probably writing it overall might have taken 6 months.
And I guess you said there you were writing articles, newsletters, information for your website. Was it difficult to write a book? You know, did you just go, right, I'm just going to write it, or did you have to do some training, or how did you do that?
I'd done some training in years leading up to the point where I wrote the book. I recognised early on in my business that I wanted to get into writing in some way. Plus, when I had done my degree in adult education as a mature student, I'd picked up some writing skills there also. So I had done some short courses on writing and submitting articles and, you know, other things that had been offered not only through writers' groups but also through National Speakers Association. My strategy in writing the book is, in fact, I'm very good at putting together an outline. Mm. So I come up with what all the chapter headings are going to be, you know, what's all the sort of overview of the content. And, in fact, the way I tend to write my books is almost like I'm writing a whole bunch of articles. that link together, of course, but if I think about it as writing, you know, a short article at a time, it's actually much easier to do rather than, you know, the daunting prospect of writing a 250 or 300 page book. You'd never get started.
Do you have any advice then for sort of people who would love to write a book?
I think it's important that you're really clear on what your topic is that you're writing about, and that you really need more information than you can possibly cram into the book. Because there's nothing worse, I think, than reading a book where you think, oh, you know, there's struggles to fill this out. That's not to say that, you know, a short book isn't good. A lot of people have, you know, limited time nowadays to read. So, you know, a short book, but not one that looks padded. So I think it's important that you've got to have a lot more information than you are going to use in the book. And I think, for me, structure is important. You've got to know, what are the chapter areas going to be? How am I going to structure this? So for my fresh book, it was really easy. I had an introductory chapter and then obviously one chapter for F-R-E-S-H. So you end up with, you know, six chapters. The same with my current book, Keep 'Em Keen. I'm actually divided it up into parts. The first is understanding the issues, and the second part is about taking action. So I then have in each section three chapters. So the first is understanding engagement, then it's understanding the generations, then it's understanding career stages, and then I repeat that when it comes to taking action. So once I've done that, you know, you look at all the research you have, either gathered personally or by looking at it other sources, and you're easily able to say, well, where does this fit into my structure?
That's brilliant. So just talking a bit about publishing, how did you publish your book?
In both cases, I've gone with self-publishing. This was as a result of attending a number of publishing workshops and reading up on it. I'm also a very big fan of someone I'm sure you're familiar with, Joanna, and that is Robin Henderson, who has done a lot of work around publishing. And the generally accepted advice is that unless you are somebody who is famous or you have some kind of topic that is really going to appeal to publishers immediately. You know, it's going to be, you know, record-breaking, brand new, no one's ever heard of it, but highly marketable. You're much better off to go with self-publishing because you can get the book out there much faster. And you've got to be realistic about why you're writing the book, what you're hoping it's going to do for you, and who's going to buy it.
Absolutely. And I've seen your book cover. I mean, your book looks very professional, doesn't it? It doesn't, you know, it could sit on a bookshelf.
Well, that was the idea, is I actually did some research. I looked at books that had been self-published, particularly by members of the National Speakers Association, and you know, I've been doing this over a number of years, and I'll be honest and say, there were some books I looked at and I thought, that looks self-published. You know, that doesn't look quite up to the standard. And there are, have the association's gone through stages where we recommended that anybody get a book out of any standard just to say you had a book. And I think that that is to the detriment of those people who put more effort in. So I made sure that it had that that look about it. And simple things like what sort of paper do you use in both on the cover and inside the book, and going to the trouble of having, you know, that glossy cover. In fact, I'll be honest, I'd earlier printed or published another book prior to these two, much earlier in my career, not on the same topic area, and it did not have the same look and feel. So in a way, that was, I suppose, my starting out experiment, and I learned a lot of lessons from that as to getting the right look and feel.
So have you tried to get your book into bookshops, or you literally sell it from your website and as you speak?
Okay, I have made some attempts to get it into bookshops, and in fact at the moment you can get it at the Australian Institute of Management bookshop, both here in Brisbane and also in Victoria. It's also at Mary Ryan's, which is an independent bookshop here in Brisbane, and also at some of the university co-op bookshops. And a lot of those have come about through meeting people at various events, and you know, it really constitutes a very minor amount of the sales that I get. And I must admit, at this point, I haven't pushed and pushed to try and get into some of the bigger bookstores, because it is very difficult. It is a long-term prospect to do that. And really, my goal in having the books is that when I speak at events, there are people who want to know more about what I have to say, but are not in a position to get me to come in and run a workshop in their organisation. So them being able to purchase the book allows them to get further information from me. And of course I use it as a marketing tool, you know, that I can use it as giveaways at events that, you know, that people do place emphasis on the fact that a speaker has been doing it long enough and has enough information available that they can produce books.
Mm, absolutely. So you've mentioned National Speakers Association a couple of times. Can you just explain a bit about that organisation for people who might not know?
Sure. I mean, National Speakers Association Australia, or NSAA as we call it, is the Australian branch of an international organisation. In fact, there are eight or so member countries around the world who are members of the International Federation for Professional Speakers. There's, of course, the USA where it started, there's Canada, there's England, the parts of Asia, South Africa. And what the association does is that it provides information for people who are in the speaking industry, and that covers a fairly broad range of people. There are speakers, trainers, coaches, consultants. And it provides professional development in the areas of mainly how to run a business as opposed to how to be a speaker as such. A lot of our members learn that kind of skill from Toastmasters and those sort of organisations. But National Speakers is a professional body that allows you to network with other people in your industry and learn how to operate a speaking business.
So you mentioned Toastmasters there, because for a lot of authors, you're kind of told, well, go to Toastmasters and learn how to speak. What's the relationship between, the difference between Toastmasters and National Speakers?
Very basics of public speaking. I started out in Toastmasters. I'm a very big fan of Toastmasters. Mm-hmm. I would highly recommend it to people, whether they want to become speakers or whether they, in fact, just want to build their own self-confidence. Now, when I last was involved in Toastmasters, their motto went something like this. It was better thinking, listening and speaking in that order, which is quite significant. So it is about helping people to think, whether it's on your feet or in the audience, also about thinking, speaking and listening. And the idea is that you learn those basics, how to stand in front of an audience and control your hand gestures, how to project your voice, how to structure a speech. What we tend to do once people have been through the Toastmasters experience, and not all our members go that way, but many do, once they join National Speakers, we can show you how to polish up your speaking skills. We have eight competencies, a part of the what National Speakers is all about, and we actually have a Speakers Academy where you can learn all about those eight competencies. And one of those is about stagecraft, but it is that next step on. We assume people have the basic ability to stand in front of an audience without being nervous and to be able to structure a presentation. We then in National Speakers would show you how to take it to that next level of professionalism.
Right, and you are a certified speaking professional, which sounds, you know, very official. Can you tell us a bit about that? Because that's one of the levels, isn't it, you can attain to?
That's right. It's one of the levels of accreditation that are available. You start out as an affiliate. You then go to a member level. And in order to get a member level of National Speakers, you have to give, you know, a number of paid presentations up to a certain fee and some testimonial letters. Then you become a professional member. Again, a higher expectation of income, more testimonials, some evidence of that you have expertise in your subject area, etc. Then the highest level of accreditation, in fact the only level that's recognised internationally, is the CSP, or Certified Speaking Professional, which, without trying to go into all the detail now, has clearly a much higher expectation of income. In fact, you have to prove your level of income over a 5-year period. You know, you have to have a certain number of clients, you have to be videoed, you have to have your application signed off by other certified speaking professionals to attest to your level of professionalism, as well as providing a lot of documentary evidence about how you run your business and what your clients think of you, as well as your evidence of expertise. Mm. And so this is a level of accreditation that you apply for. I'm very, you know, pleased to say there's only about 80 people in Australia who have this level of accreditation, and in fact probably only about 10% of the members of the International Federation internationally actually get this level.
Mm, that's quite an amazing achievement, so congratulations on that.
It's still sinking in. I only got it earlier in the year, and yes, when I go to association functions, I have to go, oh, that's right, I'm a CSP now.
That's great. So would you say that you are an author, a speaker, or a businesswoman first?
Oh, that's a good question. I would say a speaker first. Speaking is what I have the passion for. Obviously, the subject matter that I speak about, the idea that, you know, people can go to work every day and actually enjoy what they do, like I do, is what got me into speaking. But certainly, you know, a speaker first, you know, I love the writing. And, you know, I think if something happened and I could never speak again and someone would pay me to write, then I would be a happy woman to do that. And obviously I have to be, you have to be a business person to run a business. But it would probably be for me in that order.
Mm. No, that's great. So, what, you know, why do authors have to look at speaking these days, do you think?
Well, I don't think it's just the question of why authors need to look at speaking. I think it's why anybody in self-employment, particularly in a service or knowledge type industry, I think anyone working in that field needs to consider multiple streams of income or multiple ways of getting known to your target audience. You know, so if you're a writer of any sort, you need clients. And one way to find those clients is through speaking at various events. And look, even as a CSP, as we've just been discussing, I still regularly speak at events that I'm not paid for as a marketing exercise. It's a great way to get your business known in an industry. In my case, it's lucky that speaking is the main thing I do, so they also get to see me in action and know exactly what I can offer. But there are lots of industries where, not just in being an author, where the ability to be able to speak at an event and either speak about your business or your area of expertise is essential. You know, there's many networking functions out there, I'm sure you've been to some yourself, where they require you to stand up and give your 30-second to 1 minute little speech about you and your business. So if you don't have the ability to do that, you know, you could be the best author, you know, best writer in the world. But if you can't do that promotion, then you're not going to get known.
Thinking back to, you know, a long time ago when you weren't such a professional speaker, how does, you know, how long does it take? You know, because you stand up and you feel so nervous, you know, how long does it take and how much practice do you need before you feel comfortable?
I think that depends on your starting point. If you are a reasonably confident person to begin with, you know, you probably don't need as much practice. I mean, the revelation for me was when I joined Toastmasters. I had never done any public speaking before that, really. I wasn't involved in anything at high school, and I found Toastmasters in my mid-20s. And I discovered that I was actually reasonably good at it for a beginner. So that, my starting point was different than perhaps somebody who has an absolute dread of speaking to more than three people at the same time. You know, you're going to have a different starting point. But there's actually a book that I read late last year, and it's got a little statistic in it. It's been quoted by a few people. Now, some of your listeners might have heard of it. It's called The Outliers from Glad, and he talks about becoming proficient in something taking 10,000 hours, and that on average, when you looked at people who were brilliant, whether it was the Bill Gateses of the world or, you know, somebody who was an athlete or a musician, that in fact they had managed to put in their 10,000 hours or were getting close to it, which put them at the top of their game. So, you know, the more opportunities you give yourself to speak, the closer you get to the mythical 10,000 hours.
And then that was about 5 years, wasn't it?
Well, it varies depending on the person as to how long it takes. I mean, I'm not saying that I've necessarily done my 10,000 hours as a speaker in front of large conference audiences. I think I certainly have as a trainer, you know, in front of smaller groups. Mm. But so there are different circumstances in which you need to practice your 10,000 hours. I certainly haven't done anywhere near enough hours in front of enormous audiences. You know, if you sent me 5,000 people, that to me would be quite a daunting, not because I'd be nervous, but because the logistics and the dynamics of speaking to a group that big are different. You know, I don't do audiences of 5,000. I might do 200 to 500. But 5,000 is a whole other leap again.
And I think that's important because, you know, some authors might go, oh, well, speaking, that must mean keynote speaking or, you know, Tony Robbins speaking. But it can be, as you say, a workshop, which might be 10, 20 people.
Exactly, exactly. And if they're all interested in what it is you have to say, then you've got an accepting audience. You know, a great place for people to start, if they have a good message that they want to get across, is there a lot of networking groups out there in whatever city you're listening from. There are also things like Rotary Clubs, Chambers of Commerce, all those kinds of groups who are constantly looking for speakers. Now, you want to make sure that you've got a good message, that you've got some structure, that you can fill your 30 minutes or whatever this time slot is you're given. But there are many of them that don't pay, but are a great opportunity for you to get out there and actually do it, get your 10,000 hours up.
No, absolutely. So in terms of speaking, you know, because authors obviously want to sell their books, you know, they might be an author before a speaker, but you can't just stand up and go, well, in my book it says this and in my book it says that, can you? You know, how can you speak about your book yet not directly pitch?
Okay, well, it depends on, you know, what your book's about. If your book's about writing books, then you've got the perfect excuse. I suppose from my point of view, what I do is I tend to, on the stage, do more of what we call a soft sell than a hard sell. You know, I'm not trying to pressure people into buying. My strategies are that, particularly at the moment, because Fresh is the book that I have, if I'm talking about something directly related to Fresh, I'll have a copy of the book with me, and I'll go, look, I can't quite remember this one, but can I just read it to you from page whatever of my book? So that it's a subtle, you know, that I wouldn't do that constantly. I might do one reference to that. The other thing, of course, is that I love audience participation, so I will give away a copy of the book to someone in the audience.
Mm.
So that is another subtle way of people realising, there's a book. You know, and that they can then get further information on that. So you've got to feel comfortable. Some people do a real hard sell, whereas I tend not to. The other way too is to, if you personally don't want to do too much mention of your book, is speak to the organisers of the event, whoever's going to be introducing you, the MC, and get them to refer to it. Perhaps at the end of the presentation to say, copies of Karen's books are available at the back of the room. I understand they're $27.50. She can take credit cards. She has a few limited stocks with her today. That kind of thing sounds better coming from someone else.
No, those are brilliant tips. I really appreciate those myself. right, so we talked a bit there about networking organisations. So one of the advantages of networking in person as an author as well as online?
I think this is where authorship and speaking certainly overlap. Both of them are, I think, a personal experience. You know, if you're going to invest money in the book, you're actually buying a little bit of the person in a way. Yeah. And I think having met the person and seen what their style is, and if who you present as in person matches the style of how you write your book, then that can really work in your favour, because they can go, yes, you know, gee, she's just like what I read, or, you know, that they can see that if she's like that in person, I'll enjoy reading her book. So I think it's, you know, it is a very personal way of getting known. And look, business today is all about making connections. It's all about who you know and who knows you. I think one of the important things I've learned in networking, because I've been doing it here in Brisbane certainly for a number of years now, is you need to be consistent. Mm. If you just go to a group once and go, oh, well, no one bought my book, or no one booked me for whatever it is that my services, I'm not going back there. That was a waste. You've got the wrong idea. Because I know there are events that I go to constantly that I don't always get something immediately out of them. But you've got to be in there for the long-term investment. Certainly you should go around your local area and the target market that you're wanting to work in and check out all the different groups and decide which ones are appropriate for you. You know, there's some groups that aren't right, and so that you may not return to them. But the ones that you see potential in, you need to go fairly regularly so that you're known to people. You know, there's a real phenomenon out there that people see you are a couple of years down the track, and you're maybe not going to every meeting, but you're still regularly turning. Oh, you're still out there doing it. Because a lot of people, unfortunately, in consulting-type work, that come and go. You know, and one minute they're self-employed, and the next minute they're giving you a different business card because they've gone and got a job, and then they're doing something else, and they're doing something else. And so people can be hesitant to think, oh, is this person really serious about the business they state they're in, because they seem to be changing all the time? Now, you know, there could be very good reasons why they do that, but people are looking for consistency.
And that's a very good point, because I think for authors, you know, it's a long-term project. You often don't just write one book. You're on your third now, I guess. I've just finished my third, and, you know, you keep on doing it, don't you, and you build for the long term. So that's obviously the same in the speaking market as well.
It is. And I go back to my point before about, you know, advice out there at one stage was, whoever you are, just write a book. Doesn't matter how bad it is, just write a book. We've gone past that now to say, no, you need to write books as a speaker because you enjoy writing and you have something to say. I know of some very successful speakers who do not have a book. It's not something they want to do. Some of them may have other forms of product, but for them, that is not the way to go. Others, of course, use ghostwriters. And, you know, or, you know, go in collaborative books where they're writing one chapter and it's part of a bigger collection of chapters. You know, so you can't just do something because the rule book says you must do this. You know, I think that's a mistake. I enjoy writing. In fact, when I finished, you know, with this podcast today, I'm getting to work on the final chapter of the next book because I enjoy doing it.
No, that's great. And you mentioned products there, and I know some authors are a bit hesitant, you know, to think of their book as a product, but that is basically what it is. But you also, obviously, you speak, which is another product because you sell your speaking services, and you also have audio CDs. So why do authors need to be more than just a writer? Why do you need these multiple products?
I'm going to put my educator's hat on now, you know, from my experience in adult learning. People all learn in different ways. Some people love to read a book, as in a printed out, I can sit on a plane or a train and read the book. Other people love the idea of online books. I personally can't do that. If people, you know, send me e-books either for free or I purchase e-books on relevant topics, I have to print them out. Now, I know that's wasting paper, but that's how I read.
Mm.
You know, other reasons to have things like audio products, and I don't sell my audio CDs so much now because I've found that my particular market does prefer books. But audio CDs can be great if you've got clients who are travelling a lot, you know, so whether it's on planes, trains, cars or whatever else. Some people can't read, but they're quite happy to plug in earphones and listen that way.
Mm.
The next sort of product I'm looking at is e-books.
Mm.
E-courses.
Mm.
E-courses.
Yeah.
So that, you know, people like getting messages to their email, you know, weekly or monthly or whatever it is, that's a learning experience. And so do it that way. I already have a free service that I provide to people who've attended my programs, and that is what I call email boosters. So they get a short little, you know, one paragraph message once a week for 10 weeks after the event to remind them of the key points. So my e-courses are going to expand on that, probably have, you know, guest authors in there as well, you know, other people that I'm in contact with, case studies from my clients, etc., to add value to that, and that will be a product that I market at a price rather than for free.
Mm. And, you know, just to be frank on it, you know, we don't make our money just from the book, do we? I mean, you must make more money from consulting and speaking than you do from your book sales.
Absolutely. And look, I'm honest with people that my goal with the book is more about positioning and marketing, and it is about that if I can sell enough to at least cover the cost of producing it, to me, that is a great form of marketing rather than pay advertising to be in something. If I can produce my book for, you know, $5,000 and make that or more on it, I've just gotten free marketing.
Mm.
Because people are going to keep a book. You know, you get given a book, it's something you put on your bookshelf that you do pull it out again, you might loan it out to other people. You know, it is an item that people want to keep. So that's how I look at the writing the books. Completely different, of course, if you want to make your living from selling the books.
Mm.
But for those people who are listening who are more coming from my point of view, that they enjoy writing and they see it as a supplement to whatever consulting style business they do on as well, then, you know, they can certainly learn from that lesson.
Mm, absolutely. Or if they have a book, they can grow a consulting organisation, I guess, from that material. You know, even though you did it the other way, it can still be done that way.
Oh, definitely it's done the other way as well.
Mm, absolutely. So just a couple more questions. So you've also been featured in a number of print publications, magazines, newspapers. So what are your tips for getting publicity for your book?
I've, again, developed those relationships over a long period of time. Some of them have been a result of being actively involved in different networking groups that I know also produce publications. And as I said, some of them are a result of speaking at conferences whereby the organisers have said, oh, can you provide an article? Now, given that they've enjoyed my article and sold their readers, I've then put it to them that I can provide others. And I actually have a few people now who are on my monthly newsletter mailing list, and they simply, when they like something that I've put in the newsletter and it's relevant to their next publication, they use it.
Mm.
So it is about building up those relationships. It's much harder to just cold call, so to speak, publications. I've tried doing that on some occasions. Hasn't gotten me particularly far. It's more likely if once someone's seen me speak or seen my publication that I'm already been in, that that success breeds more success.
Mm.
And I think the main thing is you've got to get the right target audience. You know, there are some publications out there that, that are only technical. They're not interested in management type articles, which is really where I fall in, you know, in the HR management type area. So you've got to make sure you've seen a copy of the publication and you go, yes, they do take the sort of articles that I've got, because otherwise you're just wasting time to contact them and you're showing, I suppose, a bit of ignorance. And they go, well, we don't even do those kind of articles.
Mm.
The same with submitting them online. You know, I've got a few places where they're online, but they've mainly approached me. I've gone out and looked at some and other ones to say, oh, well, I want to get in this, but it's finding the right ones.
That's great. So where can people find you and your book?
Okay, well, you can certainly go to my website, letsgrow.com.au. I also have the domain name karenschmidt.com.au, so put either of those in there. You can also buy my book online at Women's Network Australia. So womensnetwork.com.au, sell that. And as I said, the there are bookshops here mainly in Brisbane. Where you can get them as well.
Mm, that's great. But from your website, international audiences can order the book, can't
they? Absolutely. Yes, absolutely they can. We've got a currency converter on there, so they can figure out what it costs in their local currency. Obviously, we need to look at what postage would be also, but certainly. And the more I can get overseas, the better. I already have a few in New Zealand and some in Southeast Asia.
Mm.
So, you know, it'd be great to get a few in other countries too.
Yes, yeah, so you're looking to expand your speaking business globally, are you?
Had some opportunities in the last year to speak in New Zealand, which for an Australian is a logical next step.
Mm.
But I've also now got a couple of clients who are in Singapore and Malaysia. So I've been doing some work over there.
Mm.
And not so much on my Fresh program, but on the generational management. So the new book, Keith and Keen, will be something that I'll be looking at offering as part of the package when I go over.
Well, that's brilliant. Well, thank you ever so much, Karen. There was lots of great tips in that material. Thank you.
I hope it helps your listeners.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You can get more information on writing, publishing options, sales and promotion for your book at www.thecreativepen.com, and that's pen with a double N. And you can also get your free How to Be an Author workbook at www.howtobeanauthor.com. See you next time.